FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's July 10th, 2018. Well, as always, make my day. You know, I start out my days at a certain coffee chain that allows the most indecent, inhumane behavior. I mean, you can sit there all day, not order a thing, mooch off their Wi-Fi, do drugs, anything you want to do. Maybe it's a true libertarian coffee place, but that's where I choose to start my days, and I start them reading your emails. So be a part of the show, be part of my morning ritual. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. As you know, I am off to Freedom Fest tomorrow, and it's going to be a great one. This is the 11th one. I missed the 10th one last year because of a birthday celebration. If you're around, be sure to email me. I'll buy you lunch. Hey, talking to libertarians, talking about people who believe that you are the best judge to do with what you please with your life, as long as you don't hurt anyone or inflict damage upon others. Well, our good friend Daniel McAdams is back with us, executive director of the Ron Paul Institute. Daniel, welcome back.
Hi, Kerry. Thanks for having me back.
It's always great to talk to you, Daniel. There's so much going on right now. I guess we got to start with President Trump's Supreme Court pick, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, soon to be Justice Brett Kavanaugh, of the D.C. Circuit Court of, I think it's the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. I might have the court wrong, but it's generally the court that hears administrative appeals from governmental agencies and things such as that. What's your take on this whole ritual?
Well, we actually just did the Ron Paul Liberty Report that Dr. Paul and I do every day, and we touched on the topic. And as I'm sure you do, Kerry, we wanted to try to look for a different angle because everyone is lining up as expected. When I suggested the topic to Dr. Paul, he said, you know, I don't want to be aligned with Schumer and Pelosi and these guys, you know, and it's they all play their predicted roles. It's all very predictable. So we wanted to step back and just look at it from a perspective that we view as important, things like civil liberties, where it's views on civil liberties. And I'm sure you know Jonathan Turley, who I think is one of the best constitutional scholars out there and professors. And he had a good piece this morning in The Hill where he was generally favorable to Kavanaugh. But there were a couple of areas where he had some concerns. And I think we share those concerns. And those do have to do with civil liberties. They have to do with the Fourth Amendment and his views on executive power. So there are some reservations there, but it's not because we're R's or D's or any of these ridiculously foolish things that Dr. Paul calls the radical center, which really rules Washington and is authoritarian in nature. It's something that's very different. It's more ideological. So that would be our concerns about it. We can go into more detail about that.
Interesting you mentioned that, because he ruled favorably on NSA mass data collection. You know, the collection of metadata on cell phone records and emails and such. And, you know, that's something that's concerning. Way back when he was a pup working for the Star Independent Counsel's Office, working on the impeachment of Bill Clinton, he seemed to be the opinion that Vince Foster really did kill himself, which maybe he did, but it's certainly beyond all doubt that his body was transported out there to Fort Marcy Park. It was seen by a witness. So there's a lot more than meets the eye, but hey, nobody is perfect. My own personal take on it, and you can feel free to agree or disagree, he's basically what happened. The Gorsuch nomination, much more important than this one, because Gorsuch, being Kennedy's law clerk and protege, when he was elevated to the court, all of a sudden, Kennedy found his backbone. The last 19 5-4 decisions, Kennedy has deciding vote with the conservatives. That's significant, and it tells me that what we're getting here isn't really a revolution in the court. It's a continuation of Kennedy's rediscovery of his conservative roots. And therefore, we should be focusing on other things, this just isn't that big a deal.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And it sounds like you follow it more closely than I do necessarily. But, you know, the NSA thing, I think, is important, and it is significant. It demonstrates his view of the relationship between government and the governed. You know, he defended the mass surveillance program, the one that was exposed to us by Ed Snowden, whereby they virtually sucked up everything and stored it for 5 years. And his defense was that he refused to hear the case against the program because he didn't believe that it constituted a search. The sucking up of all our information was not a search and thus not in violation of the Fourth Amendment. But, you know, he went even further than that. And he said, even if it was a search, the government has a right to intercept our calls because there was a, quote, special need to prevent terrorism, which overrides our privacy. And that's, I think, a dangerous way to view the world, that you can suspend the Constitution if there is a, quote, special need. Because, you know, Kerry, with the government, there's always a special need.
Yeah, when was the last time the government did something where there wasn't a special need? You know, it's the same grounds that they use to get amendments passed, like the income tax, like prohibition, all these things. There's always a special need, because if the government sticks its head in the tent, then there's a special need. That's what all us libertarians are out there fighting, is, you know, that the extraordinary for the government becomes the everyday ordinary, and therefore they have a right to stick their nose into anybody's business for any reason. And at some point we got to fight this, because it's not consistent with principles of freedom and personal freedom and personal sovereignty.
Yeah, absolutely. And Turley, who we mentioned earlier, who, as I say, generally supportive, but he said with this NSA decision, you know, to not hear the case, he went out of his way to position himself at the outer limits of executive power. And we've been concerned with the executive's encroachment on an all too willing Congress. I mean, that's the real problem, Kerry, but Congress is all too willing to be encroached upon. But this encroachment of executive power over the legislative branch, the people's branch of government, is a danger. So if he has that philosophical predisposition to view that with favor, then that really is, I think, a threat to our liberty as well.
Agreed. And, you know, that goes with the whole thing of presumption that laws are validly passed, presumption that regulators are carrying out their mandate. Why not have a presumption that all of this is outside the Constitution and it's up to the government to prove contrary, rather than somebody challenging a government action? I mean, why don't we presume that most government actions actually are illegal and unconstitutional?
Hear, hear. You know, we had Turley in the office, in Dr. Paul's office on Capitol Hill, a couple of times for his famous Thursday lunches, where the Remember lunches. And I remember Turley once was sort of chiding the other members and said, why don't you guys stand up to the Supreme Court? You know, this is not, they're not, you know, it's not coming down from on high into Moses' hands. You know, if they make a stupid decision, pass a law, challenge them, be more active. And I thought that was kind of an interesting perspective.
Absolutely. They aren't, they're only 9 human beings, although sometimes we tend to believe otherwise. I mean, I kind of pine for the day, Daniel, when they would hand down a 5-page decision. These decisions didn't go on for hundreds of pages in a way that only people who are lawyers or very ingrained with the law can understand what they're saying. And even then you have problems. I mean, why do these decisions need to be that long? It seems to me that it really excludes individual participation from the judicial system, puts it beyond the realm of the everyday man, and makes it this specialized black box where, you know, arguments go in and decisions come out, and somehow the black box always gets it right.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's also very true in the legislative branch. You know, if anyone's ever tried to read most of this legislation, it's like, you know, substitute section 3.1 for, you know, and they purposely do it that way, I think, to make it kind of this, sort of a Gnosticism. You have to be in this wonderful club to understand it. And, you know, Dr. Paul always had a rule that if you're going to write a piece of legislation, draft a piece of legislation in his office, it better be really short and be really readable, because the purpose is to educate and not necessarily to legislate.
Yeah, and whatever happened to plain English? I mean, I live in Florida. Yeah. There's plenty of problems here with our government, trust me. But I think that I wouldn't say an average person, but I'd say a person who's at least done a year or two of college can read any statute in the statute books here and understand what it says. And yet, that is not the case for bills passed by the U.S. Congress. It's the exceptional person who can understand it, and it's the exceptional person who can understand exactly what the heck the Supreme Court is saying. You know, when we look at Roe versus Wade, the average person and the average liberal thinks that it just legalized abortion across the board. And it didn't do that. The only thing it did was, for the first trimester, gave a woman an unfettered right to an abortion. Second trimester, there's a governmental interest. And third trimester, it outlawed them and kept them outlawed. And yet now, the misperception of what Roe versus Wade was, its importance in American jurisprudence, is completely out of kilter.
Yeah, it's become a dogma.
Yeah, a myth.
Dogma of the faith.
Yeah. So, there's more going on in the world than just the Supreme Court and Congress. We're seeing another NATO showdown with Trump against our allies, saying basically, we're tired of parking our troops in Germany. We're tired of paying for it all. If you want to keep them there, you got to step up to the plate. What do you think is going to happen here?
I think this is another case where Trump's instincts are basically right. I think he gets it. This is in tune with what he's been saying quite a bit in the campaign, even about how these freeloaders are taking advantage of us and they should pay their way. And I think it's a reasonable point, but I think he kind of misdiagnoses the reason. It's not just that the Germans are lazy and they'd rather have us pay for it. It's not that they want to sit back and be defended. It really is essentially that they don't perceive the kind of threat coming from Russia or elsewhere that they would like to have us believe. They want to play up the threat because they, you know, frankly, having the U.S. military there is good for the local economy in many ways. But if they truly felt threatened, just like us, Kerry, as individuals, if we truly felt threatened by a neighbor, we'd either stock up on guns or we'd, you know, do something different. The reason they spend so little on their defense is that they genuinely realize that the chances of Russia jumping into a bunch of tanks and rolling over the Rhineland or what have you is pretty low. So they're actually acting in their self-interest, and they're getting a bonus having us dump tons of our money into their economy on top of it.
Yeah, now, though, it's like, oh, we don't want you to go. Please stay. Please stay. So is it just for economic interest, self-interest, or is it a bit of an insurance policy, too?
I think it's both, too. And don't forget, the military-industrial complex is transnational. You know, there certainly are German companies that benefit from the war footing, and there are jobs at stake. You know, remember when Senator Paul was challenged on our sending of all these weapons to Saudi Arabia, which is bombing the heck out of Yemen for several years. And remember when Wolf Blitzer, so for you, this is a moral issue? And Rand said, yeah. And I said, well, don't you realize there are jobs at stake?
What's more moral than jobs?
The purpose of our military is simply to create jobs that really don't do much to help the economy. You know, it's the whole broken window fallacy that I'm sure your listeners are well aware of. There is a lot of that too. And unfortunately, the war party has created a kind of Frankenstein economy, which benefits them to the expense of the rest of us.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's kind of shocking. And but you know, you can't be surprised about it. Certainly, there's no shocks here. And like you say, the military-industrial complex is a transnational affair, certainly not just limited to the U.S. There's millions of jobs around the world riding on the next defense contract, and you can never forget that. So, you know, we got something like 60,000 troops left in Europe. It costs billions, tens of billions of dollars a year. They don't want to kick in their share for them. And what do we do? Do we just bring them home?
Yeah, I think a President Paul would say that. Certainly a President Lutz and a President McAdams may say that, but I don't think it would be that simple for Trump, but I think Trump has a bully pulpit, and I think he has the ability to articulate in his own way, in a way that could be very effective. You know, I think, was it about a week ago where he said, hey, I didn't realize we had 30,000 troops in Germany. What's that all about? You know,
yeah.
It's a good instinct that he has about it. Of course, then his advisors will rush to his side and say, oh, you know, Mr. President, you can't say that. So it's it'll be interesting to see if there are fireworks. President Trump has shown that he is not a huge fan of Angela Merkel, and she's already on the ropes big time. So it'll be kind of be interested to see what happens there. And of course, the Trump-Putin summit, which is scheduled after this, will also be something of great interest, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, it will. Well, there's a lot going on in the world here. You know, one thing's for sure, since Trump got elected president, there are no slow news days anymore, right?
mean, exactly.
There's no slow news days, and he's really full employment for the most mediocre of the media. He ensures that the least talented and least intelligent of the media have good paying jobs. So maybe that's part of making America great again, Daniel.
Maybe, but it is fascinating to watch, because the more the media attack him, the higher his numbers go. And that was remarkable during the campaign to see that. You'd think that they would catch on. The more they call him a monster, the more people like it.
And but look, their whole reason for being now is just to report on Trump and to slam him. And they really can't pull back. And they really need him in the next election. And they really need him to get reelected when you get down to it. It's a real symbiotic relationship, because he couldn't be as effective as he is without a hostile media, right? It would be impossible for him to reach the number of people. If he didn't have a hostile media, how big would his Twitter following be?
Now, he's great at having his finger on the pulse of America. And I don't want to sound like I'm praising him, because we've been probably more critical than most.
I hope
so. He understands that Americans do not trust the media, and he plays on that. I think just like he understood that Americans are sick of this crazy, irrational Cold War mentality, and I think he tapped into that. So, but to show you, Kerry, how crazy the media is, remember when he was rattling the saber about North Korea, and the media was, oh my gosh, he's going to have a World War III, he's going to have a nuclear war, what a monster. And then he went up and met with Kim, and they said, oh my God, this is terrible, he met with Kim.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what he does. You know, in Yiddish, there is a term, I'm not a big Yiddish person, don't get me wrong, but my mother always used to throw it at me, Moshe Kapura, and that stands for Morris the Opposite. And it's just like, whatever he does, the media is Morris the Opposite. You know, if he just said, hey, if today he said, you know, I'm going to appoint Liawatha there, Elizabeth Warren, to the Supreme Court, he'd be roundly condemned by the liberal media, you know, right? He can't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's so fun to watch.
That's a great term.
Yeah, it's just fun to watch, because, you know, you see the disingenuousness of the arguments, and that he's the direct beneficiary of it. And look, the Supreme Court, right now, you've got the Senate, all these Senate seats. I don't like to dwell too much on politics, but there's 10 Senate seats in states that he carried by small to wide margins. And they're caught between a rock and a hard place here. Especially a lot of them voted for this guy before, and now all of a sudden they're not. And are you voting for Chuck Schumer? It really puts them in a bind. And, you know, that's pretty masterful politics in and of itself. So I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks ahead. Hey, we want to connect with the Ron Paul Institute, get more involved in it. Where do we find you at, Daniel?
We're at ronpaulinstitute.org. And if I can do a shameless plug, we're having our Washington, D.C. conference on August 18th in Washington, D.C. If you go to our website, you'll see a kind of a display ad with more info. We got some great speakers. We're actually going to be talking about the media at the conference. That's a special focus of ours. So love to see all of your listeners come join us in D.C. on August 18th.
And it really sounds great, especially the emphasis on the media. They did Dr. Paul so much harm during his tenure and during his efforts running for president because the media didn't take him seriously. Therefore, he wasn't a serious candidate. And nothing could have been further from the truth. You know, Dr. Paul addressed issues that no other candidate prior to his participation ever dreamed of addressing, like the military-industrial complex, like mass surveillance, so many other issues. And really, the media did the country such a disservice. I'm not saying they had to put him up on a, elevate him on a silver platter, just treat him fairly as the other candidates. And they did the same thing with Rand when Rand ran last time as well, although the two are quite different in their strategies and their outlooks, but certainly they are fighters for freedom. Daniel, thank you so much for coming back on. Always great to talk to you. We'll connect with you again real soon. Be well.
Thanks very much, Gary. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.